Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson, and I'm here with Ryan Dobson.
Well, Dad and Luann, we're going to talk about a subject that is very near and dear to me right now because I have gotten none of it. We have a baby at home, and we're not sleeping. Last night, Laura got up at 3 in the morning and drove Lucy around, and she wouldn't go to sleep, and came back around 3:30. I drove her till 4:10.
Oh, and, my.
So I'm glad we're going to be talking about this today.
Well, it's a very relevant topic for many, many people who have difficulties. You could sleep if Lucy would let you, couldn't you? You're not having trouble sleeping.
He could probably sleep right now.
I'd love to sleep right now.
Well, you know, we hear about people who seem to thrive, or they think they do, on 4 hours of sleep per night. And in fact, I know one gentleman who reads till about 3 o'clock in the morning every night and then gets up about six. And that is his lifestyle, and he thinks that that works for him. But it's my view that you'll pay a price for that one way or the other. Winston Churchill was like this. He slept very little, and then he'd take a nap in the afternoon. He somehow got away with that. And speaking for myself, I need 8 hours a night if I can get it. And once a week, I need nine, and probably need nine more than once a week because that's the way I'm made. My dad was that way, and that's the way I am. But we're going to talk about sleep deprivation with our program today. And we have a guest with us, again, one of my favorite people, Dr. Arch Hart, who is a retired professor and psychologist and former dean of Fuller Theological Seminary. You're not really retired, are you?
I still teach,
writing and teaching.
But I do what I want to do, and nobody can boss me around. That's the joy of it.
What would be so pleasant about retiring? I'm not contemplating it because the Lord has told me that there's still work to be done. But what He has told me is keep working. But I wish that I could gain control of my mornings. I wish I could get up in the morning, read the paper, exercise, have devotions, take Shirley to breakfast. That would be wonderful.
That's retirement.
Well, you have written a book, Dr. Hart, called Sleep, It Does a Family Good, How Busy Families Can Overcome Sleep Deprivation. And this book's only been out a couple of years, but it is loaded with information that will be relevant to, I think, probably all of our listeners. You're married to Kathleen, a woman that we absolutely love, and you have three daughters. Two of them have PhDs in psychology, and the third one has a doctorate of ministry with a specialty in counseling. So you guys are all over the issue of emotional problems and the struggles that go
They are called the heart girls at the conferences and things we go to, because it's very seldom that a father has all his girls doing what the father does. I can tell you I didn't influence any of them.
Absolutely not.
They chose it themselves.
Well, you've written 25 or 30 books of your own. And I think this is one of the best about sleep. Talk about the guy that I was just discussing who reads till 3 o'clock in the morning and just doesn't need much sleep. Yeah. Is that really a fact? Some people don't need sleep.
Very common. They wear it as a badge of honor. I don't need that much sleep. And they are proud of it. Mm-hmm. And there's a penalty that you pay when you're not getting enough sleep. There is no doubt about it. All of nature sleeps. There's no creature God has created that doesn't sleep. We sleep one-third of our life. There's one drug company now that is trying to come up with a pill that if you take it, you won't need to sleep. In other words, they really believe that they can do away with the need for sleep. Of course, most scientists, experts in this field laugh at it because we have to sleep.
It's a fundamental need, very much like air and water and food,
yes.
Right?
The creature that sleeps the least amount of time is the crocodile. And look how ugly it is. Because, you know, sleep and beauty is a fact. It is an actual fact.
And that crocodile snaps a lot. So there's some correlation here.
Snaps a lot. But there is a myth. And for some reason, there are large numbers of people who somehow have got the idea that one doesn't need as much sleep. And then in some cases, they have a problem that is causing that. But the bottom line is we have to sleep, and we not getting enough sleep. We are today sleeping less than we did 50 years ago, 100 years ago. We are about 3 hours of sleep less than people were 150 years ago.
And you believe that that is not only a matter of deprivation and exhaustion, but it is also a health problem because it influences the heart.
It has several very serious consequences that we can probably get into as we move along. But just consider this, trying to make the point how essential sleep is. Rats normally live 2 to 3 years. If you deprive a rat of sleep, it dies within 5 days, which is the same amount of time they will die if you starve them, 5 days. We need sleep. We are not getting the sleep we need today. In ancient times, you had two sleeps. Some of the storytellers of ancient times, they talk about the two sleeps, the first sleep and the second. There was the third sleep, that was death, but the first sleep and the second sleep. And the first sleep was about 7-8 hours because you did physical work mainly. You needed physical rejuvenation and restoration and repair. Mm-hmm. And then you'd wake up and then you'd have a light sleep for 2 or 3 hours called the second sleep. And that was used mainly for prayer time and devotional time and things like that.
You know, I was a professor of pediatrics at the University of Southern California School of Medicine, and my heart went out to those medical students, but particularly the residents.
Yes.
And it's hard to believe that the medical community pushes those young people like they do. They don't get any sleep at all. Some of them are working 100 hours a week, and they are on call in the middle of the night. That just absolutely makes no sense to me.
They're beginning to change that now because of the mistakes that these interns were making.
And yet that's a common attribute we give them, that if you can do so much, you must be important and you're busy. I'm thinking of those proverbs that we read, a little slumber, a little sleep, a little folding of the hands, and poverty comes on you. So we laud hard work. We build it up and we imply that if you sleep, you're weak and you're lazy.
But see, we're making comparisons between a time when you were sleeping 12 hours as opposed to most are sleeping 6 or 7 hours now. The latest Medscape is a medical journal. The latest Medscape reports that 1 in 9 people are not getting enough sleep. They're not getting the sleep that they need. That came from a Harvard Medical School study, and that is being aggravated by the digital world and the gadgets that are designed to keep us awake and keep us going longer.
The National Commission on Sleep Disorders recommends that the average people need how many hours per week? You know that study.
Yes.
And how many hours do they need?
Well, the general amount of sleep needed is 8 hours is what they're recommending. But the problem with that is that 8 hours of actual sleep or is it 8 hours of bedtime? So that's why in my book, and I have preached this since I wrote Adrenaline and Stress many, many, many years ago, I have advocated that you should have 9 hours of bedtime. In other words, from the moment you put your head down to when you lift it up, should be about 9 hours. And if you do that, you get about 8 hours of actual sleep time.
I interviewed you on that book, Adrenaline and Stress, and the relationship between cortisol or the stress hormone and the heart.
Yes.
It really has major implications for the health of the heart.
Yes.
Let's summarize that real quickly. Yes. That study is still valid.
Yeah. Well, one of the main reasons why we don't get enough sleep is because our adrenaline is running too high. Adrenaline and cortisol are basically running too high. And with the heightened adrenaline comes increase in cholesterol. There is this very strong link between high adrenaline and increasing in cortisol, which is why when you're under a lot of stress, your cortisol level goes up. Yeah. And that's the reason for that, because your cholesterol goes up, because your body needs the cholesterol during those emergencies. Cholesterol is one of its functions. It serves as a lubricant for the joints. So if you've got to run and fight, you need that sort of lubricant. And as a consequence, what you get is plaques forming and the deposit of plaque in the artery.
In this book, Sleep, It Does a Family Good, you talk about reasons that people don't want to try to go to sleep. There are two of them. Explain what they are.
Well, there are the two reasons why. One is that they think it's a waste of time. And that's an indoctrination. I mean, that's what the common population is believing. And we teach that. Even we've got to be careful when we say to our children, you know, you're wasting time, like falling asleep on the couch. I know that with my grandchildren, when they were teenagers, Saturdays, you couldn't get them to do anything on a Saturday morning. They crashed. And I had to have it out with my daughter, Sharon, because I said to her, that's a good thing. Because they are making up for sleep, the deprivation of the week. But then for many, this is when you're lying down to go to sleep, that's when your mind goes to work. Now you begin to worry about things. You replay everything of the day, and that just stimulates your adrenaline and keeps your melatonin away. And so it's very difficult to fall asleep, which is one of the reasons why I advocate that when going to bed, a very good habit to develop is to do a bit of journaling. It's externalizing it. It's like putting it into the hard drive and you can leave it there and it's safe. So that if you have thoughts in your mind, things that you've forgotten, just journal them. Mm-hmm. I have a notebook next to my bed all the time. And if I have forgotten to do something and I'm there trying to go to sleep, I will wake up every hour or two and my brain will remind me that you still have to do that other thing. But if I write it down, peace.
I think everybody out there is saying, I want to get better sleep. I want to be able to lay down and go to sleep and not have my mind race and not go to bed with worry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start with a brief summary of what sleep is. Sleep has five stages, stage 1 through 5. And then there is a next stage called REM sleep or dream sleep. You've got to go through the first 5 before you can start to dream. And that cycle, is about 1.5 hours. So 5 cycles for the one, and then that takes 1.5 hours. In the early stages of the first cycle of the night, most of it is in the stages 2, 3, and 4. And then just a few minutes.
It's not very deep, right?
Not very deep. Then for about 2 or 3 minutes, you fall into dream sleep. Although your body is active again, and it is the culmination of the cycle. And then when you finish dreaming, you wake up. So the first thing to understand is that you're going to wake up every 1.5 hours. Now, most of us just fall straight back to sleep again. But you come close to stage 1 or you even wake up. So it's these 5 stages. For the first stage, you're still quite awake. But what is happening is that your brain is starting to produce a hormone called melatonin. Melatonin is produced only when it's dark. That's why if you want to have good sleep, make sure you've got dark curtains. Make sure you can shut out the light. So turn off everything. And you darken your environment at least a half an hour before you go to bed. And that starts the melatonin. So the first task to good sleep, get your melatonin to kick in. And that means darkness. If you go from bright light or bright television set, just turned off and turned over, you're going to lie there awake, waiting for the melatonin to develop, and that's when your mind is going to get active, and that's when the disruption is going to occur.
Melatonin can help you deal with jet lag, can it?
Yes. Now, melatonin is an over-the-counter supplement that helps to send melatonin to the brain. It augments the natural melatonin that your brain is producing. And it's approved by the Federal Drug Administration for particularly for jet lag. It's not seen to be a good thing to take on a regular basis because you shut down the brain system from producing melatonin. That's the problem with the brain. If you provide it, it won't make it. So you do it only for a short period of time.
Dr. Hart, you've pointed out the need for the length of sleep. I'm curious about the time of day. For instance, my dad used to always say, the hours of sleep you get before midnight are worth way more than those thereafter. Was he just trying to get me to go to bed early, or is there some truth to that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any truth to it at all. Because you see, what is midnight here in Colorado Springs is 11 o'clock in Los Angeles. The brain doesn't keep time like our clocks. Its timing is the darkness-lightness phenomenon. And this is essential to people who have jobs where they have to work night shift. They often get neglected because their sleep can be very, very disruptive. But the point is, if as long as you darken the environment, you can go and sleep 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
You can adjust to it.
Because the brain itself doesn't know what time it is. It's the regularity that you create for your brain by going to bed at the same time, waking up. You're telling the brain what is time to sleep and what is time to wake up. And that becomes a pattern, a habit. You can almost just guarantee you put your head on the bed and you fall straight asleep. Then lastly, the biggie, and I don't want anyone to throw cups or anything at me, but probably the most disruptive thing to sleep we put up with in modern days is the caffeine intake. Caffeine is, pharmacologists see caffeine as a drug. And see it as probably the most common drug that we abuse innocently without even realizing it. Caffeine blocks the sleep receptors in the part of the brain which is part of the tranquility system, blocks the sleep receptor. So it's impossible to fall asleep if your caffeine is too high. Now, the half-life of caffeine, is how you determine how long it takes for something to eliminate. The general rule is four times the half-life is how long something takes to leave the system. Now, the half-life of caffeine is such that you must not take it after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you take it after 3 o'clock, it is not out of your system when you go to bed, and so you are battling that receptor. If you have any sort of trouble with anxiety, I would advocate that you leave caffeine out of your diet.
And mostly we think of coffee, tea, and sodas. Are there other culprits
about
with caffeine?
Chocolate.
And there are the energy drinks.
Yeah.
Full of it. Chocolate, we don't consume enough chocolate usually.
There's a
recent move, and I don't know whether it's the chocolate industry that's doing it, towards showing that, you know, the dark chocolate has lots of other good things in it.
Flavonoids.
But those are some of the things that you can do to improve your dream sleep.
What about listening to music or something like that while they fall asleep?
You've got to be very careful there. There is some music that's pleasurable, and it isn't going to put them to sleep. You need to be careful about listening to things because it can be stimulating. Really, you have to monitor yourself and decide whether that is too stimulating or whether it is sedating and can put you to sleep.
Dr. Hart, I'm curious, too, about couples. I mean, you've pointed out that we do sleep a third of our lives.
Yes.
So they're a third of our marriage. We are sleeping with our spouse.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if they have a different cycle or if they toss and turn or if they snore, there's a lot of hindrances
there
to that.
There is. And the first thing I would say that we need to ban, in beds where two people sleep on the same mattress. That doesn't make sense to, all my daughters discovered.
What are you saying? You need two mattresses side by side?
The point is that then the one person's turning over is going to be disruptive to the other partner.
Mm-hmm.
The second important principle has to be, I think, is snoring. That can be a very disruptive. And you really need to, if you snore loud, you need to go and get an examination. You need to look and see if there's structural change that could be dealt with. But most snoring can be dealt with by not sleeping on your back. And so there are devices. There's one that you wear for the back, so you can't lie on your back. You have to turn over. But I used to be a back sleeper, but I've changed that because my wife complained that I was snoring too much. The third point is that there may be situations in couples where the one partner may need to go to another room and sleep in another room. I've known that in our family for a period of time at any rate. It can happen when one is ill, a partner is ill. I mean, this is not being unfaithful. It's not showing you don't love. In fact, it's quite the reverse. It shows that if I go and sleep in the other room, I'm being loving to my wife. Mm-hmm. I'm giving her the privilege of an undisturbed sleep cycle. And I think that it's the sort of thing you do if it's absolutely necessary. Is to move to another room.
Dr. Hart, it is always so good to have you here. It was interesting to me, and I hope it will be to our listeners as well, because we are creatures of sleep. Our brains need it. It's almost like food to the brain.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To get the opportunity to sleep and sleep as much as your body needs. And I hope that there have been people who have heard us today who will say, I can do better at that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet you they'll feel better all day long if they'll do it.
I hope there are bosses out there who institute
nap
time.
It ain't my
time.
Fault.
Yeah, as long as it's an hour and a half. Okay?
That's right.
Dr. Hart, anytime you're anywhere near here and anytime you have a couple of days to come over here and see us, the welcome mat is open. No matter what we're talking about, it is interesting to me and I think to a lot of other people. Mm. And the title of your book, again, is Sleep, It Does a Family Good. There's a double entendre there, isn't there? Because sleep does a good thing for your body, but it also does something for relationships.
It does. It can strengthen your relationship. A good sleep can make a happy marriage.
Mm. Well, happy sleeping to you.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. And Ryan, you know what they say, happy wife, happy life.
They are right.
Absolutely. If you are struggling with sleep and you find yourself laying up at night staring at the wall, Dr. Arch Hart's book is one you need to have on your shelf.
Well, not only that, Luann, but we were barely able to skim the surface of this topic, but the book goes incredibly in depth. So once again, it's called Sleep, It Does a Family Good, and you can find that at drjamesdobson.org.
And also at drjamesdobson.org, you'll find more information on Dr. Hart's other book we talked about, The Hidden Link Between Adrenaline and Stress, and that applies to all of us, I think.
Ooh, it certainly does to me. While browsing our website, would you prayerfully consider a financial contribution? We want to continue to bring programs like this to you, but we can't do it without your faithful help. So if you'd like to help us assist families who are in need, click on the Donate tab at the top of the page or by calling us at 877-732-6825. Once again, the phone number is 877-732-6825.
Well, thanks for tuning in today, and do not miss tomorrow's conversation as we'll hear a story of faith, family, and football with Kurt Warner and his wife Brenda just in time for the Super Bowl weekend, although my Denver Broncos are not in it. But you want to tune in for our visit with the Warners? That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Imagine a world where huge numbers of older Americans, and some younger ones too, will submit themselves to killing clinics, supposedly for the benefit of those they love. They become heroes.
That disturbing thought becomes very real in Dr. James Dobson's brand new novel, Fatherless, but it's a scenario that co-author Kurt Bruner explains could become a catalyst for change.
As the world gets darker and darker, the family as God designed it becomes more and more brilliant as a shining light. That's part of what we hope will happen. People will read these novels and realize, yes, it's getting darker and darker, but I can love my spouse, can nurture my children, and realize that it's the creation of those bright spots that will over time dissipate the darkness that's rising.
Request your copy of Fatherless today at drjamesdobson.org. That's Fatherless at drjamesdobson.org.